You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate
and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world.
And now, innovation thought leader
and your super fly host,
Tamara Kleinberg.
Forget disrupting the marketplace, Launch Streeters. How about you disrupt yourself first? Let's face it, disruption starts internally with each of us willing to change how we do things. So today's guest, Jay Samit, is the man behind the TED Talk Disrupt You and the creator of the Disrupt You workbook, which he offers up in the podcast, by the way, for free to listeners. So pay attention for that and go to the show notes for the link if you want to download it. He's a serial disruptor, innovator, and he raises millions of dollars for disruptive startups. Bam! Pay close attention to the parts about how to disrupt yourself, why you can either create disruption or be disrupted, and how people willing to let go of how they do things today are the ones that are going to shake up the world. Then, once you decide to disrupt yourself, go to the show notes for this podcast and download our free video tool, The Secret to Getting Buy-In from the People That Matter, because the first part of this is to disrupt, and the second part is to get others to buy into it. So, let's get to it. Jay, I'm so looking forward to this conversation. So thank you for joining me on Launch Street today.
Oh, my pleasure.
So let's start with, because I want people to know kind of where you're coming from, what is your definition of disruption?
So many people get disruption and innovation mixed up. Mm. Innovation, and the best description that I have for these two, is think of primitive cavemen, you know, killing each other with a rock, and then somebody discovers metal and they make a little knife, a bigger knife. You get to the Middle Ages, giant swords, samurais. That's all innovation. Then you get to that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where Indiana Jones is on the streets of Cairo. There's the big Arab with the giant scimitar. He's swinging it around. Indy pulls out a Smith & Wesson and shoots him. That's disruption. It's when something fundamentally comes along that changes all the incremental advances. So Henry Ford disrupted the horse industry. You know, there's giant hotel chains, and Airbnb disrupted their business. Uber disrupted how we got taxis. And the rate of disruption is ever increasing. We're living in a time where every month there's self-made billionaires in their 30s. What are they doing different? How are they seeing the world different? And how can you tap into that? And that's why I wrote Disrupt You, to teach that to people.
So I'm curious, when you say the rate of disruption is increasing, why is that? Is that just a matter of technology, or are there other forces at play?
So it's the exponential changes of technology. So we now carry in our pocket a little supercomputer that connects us to 7 billion people. You're one click away from becoming a billionaire. It's really, as we're now adding on to that mobile connectivity, we're now adding in augmented reality, which will mean that information will be tied to our environment wherever we go. We're now able to have money move seamlessly. We're now able to work remotely. We're now able to have access to centuries worth of knowledge. And it's how you put those pieces together in new and novel ways to solve problems that makes the economy move.
So I watched your TED Talk, which is why I wanted to interview you. And we'll put a link in the show notes for people as well. And one of the things you said in there that really got perked, I actually stopped what I was doing, was like, what? Tell me more. Is you had said, whether by choice or circumstance, every career gets disrupted.
Absolutely.
Yeah, talk about that.
So, you know, your parents' generation wanted you to not suffer. So get the job at the big company, you know, and you'll be safe and secure. And it's that illusion of security that robs your ambition. So what's going to happen? Of the original Fortune 500, only 57 are left.
Yeah.
So going to a big company is not a guarantee that your career will go. You could be in the music industry. The whole industry got decimated, you know, and you'll see this again and again and again. So the only defense that you have isn't that you're not going to be disrupted. It's how you respond to that disruption.
So you just said something, you kind of brushed over it fast, but for Launch Streeters, I want to pause on it because I think it's so powerful. You said it's the illusion of security that robs your ambition. Will you dig a little deeper into that? Because that made me go, whoa.
Sure. So tons of people go and they got the good job. They're working up in the company. And all of a sudden, Kodak disappears.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, major automakers, 10% of all car leases weren't renewed. People decide to go to a Uber-only lifestyle. What does that do to giant automakers? What does self-driving cars do? What does that happen to when there's no more truck drivers because they're all autonomous vehicles? Huge industries, half of all jobs, the exact number is 47%, but 47% of all jobs in the U.S. will disappear within the decade.
Wow.
How are you going to provide for your family? And at the same time, the job that you have, that you're going to day after day that you don't like, unless you really believe in reincarnation, why are you spending your life doing it? You know, are you living life or just paying bills until you die? So you have a choice in life. And too many people give up that choice.
You know, as you're talking, Jay, what I'm thinking to myself is, you know, you're kind of straddling between, you know, you and disruption and then kind of the industry being disruptive. But, you know, when you're doing that, I'm thinking to myself, wow, I probably shouldn't wait until my company comes to me and says, we're done. I should probably handle this myself because it's coming no matter what.
Yeah. And how do you make yourself indispensable? So the real reason when I looked at the books that are out there, again, this is my way of paying it forward. I've been very lucky to be part of so many tech revolutions and have great success. When I looked around and saw so many friends became self-made billionaires, you say to yourself, we're not smarter than the average Joe. We're not different. We didn't come from money. What was unique? What was unique is the change to society and how we looked at that change to leverage it for personal advantage. And that now is a level playing field. You know, most of the famous self-made billionaires that you think of, you know, the Richard Branson, the Zuckerberg, the Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, they're not college graduates. They didn't follow the path that society said. That path is broken. Everybody's coming out of college today with a mortgage but no house.
Yeah.
What skills do you need to survive, and how will you continue to learn at the pace that the world is changing?
You know, I think also out there, you hear a lot about, you know, you have to shake up the marketplace, disrupt the competition. But what you talk about, what you're saying now really is we have to disrupt ourselves. So tell me a little bit about kind of why I should disrupt myself. And I think, I guess my next question, which is really probably the more important one for our listeners, is just, okay, well, how do I do that?
So everybody thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing themselves. And it's really the hardest thing to change is your self-image. I suck at math. I can't do this. I could never public speak. I couldn't run the company. Whatever limitation was drilled into your head by well-wishers, your parents, your teachers, whatever, because you're actually listening and taking advice from people that gave up on their dreams.
So how?
Got to break out of that habit. And here's how you can do it.
Yep.
Again, that's why I wrote the book, to walk people through how to do a disruptor's map, how to change your life, how to do it. But it's really simple. I have a question for you. Do you have problems in your life?
Well, sure.
Do you have a bunch of them?
A handful.
Okay. So every problem is actually an opportunity in disguise. Mm. If you can start looking at every problem and say, wow, this problem affects other people. How can I solve this problem? Wait, there's a million people that could be solved with this. And I'll give you, you know, some classic examples that I talk about. Two kids were sitting in traffic in Tel Aviv, not exactly the biggest city in the world. And they said, wait a second, the phone company knows where my phone is. It knows where the other car's phone is. If they tell them to go right and me to go left, there's no traffic. They created Waze. Within the first year, they were billionaires without $1 in revenue. It really is that easy. And you say, wait a second, I'm not an engineer. Every person that listens to your show has written the same amount of code as Steve Jobs, which is zero. I was with Wozniak in Florida last week, and Woz was talking about, you know, how he could, at the time, code any computer that was known. I mean, he was just, you know, a genius. But he couldn't figure out. He was charging people literally, you know, less than a dollar. He thought it was fun to write the things he was doing. Steve saw a market and an opportunity, and he saw it again and again. You know, people laughed at the iPhone 10 years ago. You know, it doesn't have any buttons on it, okay? So what are the things that you know in your life, the problems that you uniquely face, that you can now take technologies that were designed for other things and change them? Everybody has this belief that, you know, people invent these, you know, fully formed, fully done like Doc Brown with the flux capacitor. It doesn't work that way. Most inventions are taking something that was already there in one industry and taking it to another. Gutenberg did not invent the printing press. What happened was people started making larger olive oil presses to press grape leaves in 500 years ago in Germany. And everybody could now make wine with less employees. And there was a ton of wine and all the wineries went broke. And there were all these used wine presses. That's when Gutenberg goes, you know, if I put my movable type in that wine press, I think I got a new business.
So, Jay, if I hear you right, it sounds to me like what you're saying, and this is a bit of a kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's almost a sense of relief in saying that it's not that in terms of disrupting myself and the world around me, because it's happening anyway, I might as well be the one doing it. It's not that I have to create something from blue sky, never been seen. Sometimes it's just about seeing the opportunity in what's already happening or what's possible.
Yeah, and it can be the simplest thing. I mean, one of my favorite stories, during World War II, the Japanese had all Southeast Asia, which means the U.S. couldn't get any rubber. So we spent millions of dollars at the top scientific labs trying to make a synthetic rubber. And they came close, and they had one that had the same viscosity and everything, but it couldn't hold its shape. And this guy came into the lab at the end of the war, and he's holding the stuff, and everybody likes to hold it, but it doesn't do anything. So he hired a bunch of college kids in the weekend, put it in plastic Easter eggs, and sold it at a toy fair. And we know it is silly putty. 300 million units have sold of a useless, failed synthetic rubber.
It's an iconic toy. Everybody knows that.
Play-Doh was wallpaper remover, okay, yeah. That was edible, okay? So there's many. Slinky was a spring system designed for submarines, and somebody dropped it down the stairs. So it's really looking at things differently. Where are the problems? So the exercise that I talk about in Disrupt You for people, and there's a free 40-page workbook I'll send anybody. Go to jsammet.com, and I'll happy to send it to you so you can start your journey today. But the exercise I tell people is write down three problems in your life. It's very simple. But do that every day for 30 days. Because what happens is as you get through the month, you run out of problems. You really didn't. What happens is you've accepted life the way it is and you didn't think of problems. So one of the classic examples from one of my readers who's now become a multimillionaire is he was about to take his medicine. The phone rings. He hangs up the phone. He goes, did I take my medicine or didn't I? He goes, wait a second. Effectively, that happens to a lot of people. They don't remember. So make a long story short, he took a little Happy Meal watch, put on the lid of a pill bottle. Every time you close the bottle, it counts down. So you look at the bottle and say, oh, I opened it 4 minutes ago. Yes, I took it. Or, oh, I haven't opened it for 8 hours. No, I haven't. Or you make a Bluetooth version so your grandchildren can know whether grandma took it, et cetera. Drug efficacy, $20 billion issue. Now every pharmacy has these, and there's bills gone through Congress to make it mandatory to save healthcare costs.
That is an incredible, incredible example. And I have to say, for launch treaters out there, what I want you to do after this podcast release is I want you to take Jay's, I'm going to just call it a 30-day challenge and do three problems every day, because I think what you said in there is so true that it's not that we have, you know, that many problems, it's that we accept and just go, oh, well, to the problems we already have when we could be solving them and disrupting how things are done.
And who wouldn't want to live a better life? And who wouldn't want to help other people? An entrepreneur doesn't sell things. All that an entrepreneur does is solve problems for others. There's another woman who I greatly admire. She didn't have a penny to her name. She had a sales job in Florida for a conservative company that required her to wear pantyhose. Well, Florida's hot and sticky and humid, and she wants to wear open-toed shoes, and it looks stupid, so she takes the scissors. She tries this and that. She finally comes up with something. Because your original idea isn't what's going to work, but as you work on it, you'll come up with something better. And she goes to all the hosiery companies, and they all laugh at her. One guy literally took her business card and ripped it up in her face. She didn't have a penny. She went to the bookstore and got patents for dummies. She wrote her patent, and now Spanx is the secret weapon for every woman in the world.
The word's out, Jay. Shh. Quiet.
she became a billionaire because her problem was, I want to wear sandals and I have to wear pantyhose.
You know, and it's interesting because I think sometimes we look at the problems as almost too simple, like, oh, that's just, it's not a big deal. But if you're dealing with it every day, other people are dealing with it, it compounds. It is a big deal.
So I've been a part of many of the big tech companies that we've created over the years that everybody uses every day. But my very first company when I was straight out of college was computers were about to go from being, you know, green screens with little letters on them to actually have graphics and photos. And I said, wait a second, where are people going to get all those photos? Why don't I license a whole bunch of photos? Again, this is before the web, and put them on CD-ROMs for people to use. A simple, simple idea. Within a year, I had 7 of the top 10 selling CD-ROMs, which then means games came to me and other uses and, you know, built an industry. But I also knew that the day the web came out, the packaged software industry was over.
Yeah,
I was going to be disrupted and have to start again and again.
So I want to ask you about, because I, you know, I'm listening to this and I'm getting inspired. I'm like, oh my God, these were all everyday people that really just took a second to solve a problem and in doing so disrupted themselves and the world. And it seems like there are some, I don't know if it's consequences or if you said in the TED Talk, trade-offs to not disrupting. So what are some of those?
Well, if we agree that society is changing faster than Darwinian rates, that jobs are disappearing, that, you know, 2.3 million robots got hired in the U.S. Last year, you know, displacing 20 million jobs. And this is going to continue. Doing nothing guarantees that you will be roadkill. And proof of this, and it's a sad proof, if you look at the actuarial tables, life expectancy in the U.S. is going up in every category except one. White males, 40 to 60. Mm. Why? Basically killing themselves, yeah. Either through drugs, alcohol, or whatever. But they've been displaced out of the workforce, especially those that haven't graduated college. And they're like, how am I going to support my family? My identity was my work. My work's been taken away from me. Why would you give up that control over your life? Why would you wait for something bad to happen when you can take those same forces of change and leverage them to have a life that you've dreamed about or give your kids a future that they can't even imagine?
You know, for launch readers out there, one of the things, Jay, that's really resonating with me as you're talking is this idea of I'm in control of it. So not waiting for the marketplace to do it to me, but to really see what's happening around me and actually be that disruptive force versus being disrupted out.
Take a simple one. We all live on social media every day, and there's tons of social media experts. Where did they come from? Did they get a degree in social media? Were they anointed it? Was it handed down from ancient generations through apprenticeship? No. One day they woke up and said, I'm going to be an expert. I'm telling everybody I'm an expert. I'm going to spend the time to be an expert, and then I'll monetize it. Why can't you do that with the Internet of Things, with 3D printing, with podcasting, with whatever?
Well, you see all these, you know, mommy bloggers or others who have taken something that they do every day, so they've become an expert in it, whether there's a degree in it or not, and actually turned it into their life and their business.
Yeah, I hired Michelle Phan about 6 years ago. She was sitting in her apartment putting makeup on and putting the videos on YouTube. Yeah. And now she's become a multimillionaire sitting in her apartment putting on makeup on YouTube.
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, I think that there's a little bit of fear that goes along with the excitement, the idea of making those changes or taking those leaps. But there's
it's absolutely terrifying. My friend Reid Hoffman, who started LinkedIn and wrote the intro to Disrupt You, his expression is an entrepreneur is somebody who jumps off the cliff and assembles the airplane on the way down.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Fear will drive you. But here's the other thing. Blocking out fear, pretending that change doesn't exist, you know, ignoring the fact that your world is going to be disrupted is insanity. And the most insane thing is not trying. Because go visit your grandparents, go to senior citizen home this weekend and ask people about their regrets in life. And invariably, their single biggest regret isn't the things that they tried and failed at, but the things that they failed to try, the risks they didn't take.
Is there a difference between failing and failure?
Absolutely. Failing is part of the process, okay? You know, you keep on trying, and as you go through the weeds, as you work on your idea and it doesn't work, you learn information that gets you better and better. And I'll give you examples in a second. Failure is throwing in the towel and giving up. So one of my favorite examples, which I've told many times in the book, is 10 years ago, broadband came out. Online dating was already popular. There were huge online dating sites. But three guys said, wait a second. If we make a dating site with videos, we're going to make a fortune. And they built a site. It was called TuneIn Hookup. And it was beautifully done. And people went to it. And there was one thing that they didn't think about. Only losers put up videos. Nobody wanted to date these people. They horrendous videos. But they looked at the data. Data is your best friend. It doesn't lie. It'll steer you the right direction. I said, nobody wants to date these. But women wanted to show those videos to all their girlfriends. This is what the choice is. They would share the videos. So they changed the name of TuneIn Hookup to YouTube and became billionaires their first year in business.
I did not know that. That is absolutely hysterical. And you know, it reminded me, I heard on a podcast I was listening to, one of the founders of Airbnb talk about their original idea for the concept. And it's really not what it is today.
They couldn't pay rent.
Yeah.
They were in San Francisco and they rented air mattresses to pay rent. But let's deconstruct this. Their original idea of let's be in the air mattress of our apartment is a stupid idea. The data thing, whatever. But when you get into it and you really put the effort in, you will discover an unmet need. And that's where the opportunity goes. Most people don't even go into the woods, let alone venture far enough, you know. And so most of your famous companies were pivots, you know. Twitter was a music service. I mean, all it takes is that energy and focus, and you never know how close you are to success if you give up.
You know, in the beginning, you had said that people confuse disruption and innovation. And, you know, the other thing I've heard you say is that we live in this era of endless innovation. So explain what you mean by that and how that impacts us.
We're no longer buying things to have forever. You don't look at your phone and say, God, I hope this battery lasts for the next 10 years. There's constantly new things, new changes that are constantly happening in all kinds of fields. I mean, from biomedicine to travel to anything you can think of. So change has become the new normal. And if we're in this era of endless innovation, of constant change, that also means that there's new pieces that you can put together in new and novel ways. You don't have to raise millions of dollars. And if you do, that's change too. You can go to crowdfunding. There's no guardians at the gate keeping you from success. There's only one person that can stop you, and it's you. And Henry Ford said it best. If you think you can or you think you can't, you're right.
How is disrupting yourself then important to your work and leadership and, you know, all the things you're trying to accomplish?
Because if you can change the fundamental essence of that voice in your head, you can change the rest of the world. You know, in my TED talk, I talk about, you know, in school, you know, I was told I was stupid. I was this or that. I was dyslexic. Okay. I couldn't read like everybody else. Turns out Richard Branson and Walt Disney and tons of other successful people, 1 out of 3 business owners of public companies were dyslexic. It turns out it wasn't a handicap. It was a different way of processing information and turns out to be an advantage. But to get over that self-doubt that, oh, somebody told me I can't, I've now become the person that the best way to motivate me is to tell me I can't, okay? And I've gone in and built billion-dollar companies. I've taken companies public. I've raised hundreds of millions of dollars for startups. And in each case, most of the people were saying I can't. So I don't want to minimize that this is easy, that this is just going to be handed to you on a platter. It's going to take work. But it's no less work than spending 40 hours a week at the job that you hate. Wouldn't you rather spend 80 hours a week doing something you love?
Yeah, and it's no less work than what happens when you get left behind and you got to figure out how to catch up.
Yeah, and what do you do when you get blindsided? And here's just a simple example for everybody that still isn't believing that half the jobs are going to go away. Let's go back 100 years ago. Simple country. Half of Americans lived on farms and they fed the other half. We didn't export any food back then. Two inventions, the tractor and irrigation. And today we have 1.8% of the population not only feeds the other 98%, but we export food to the rest of the world. That sounds like progress and exciting, but let's look at it from the other side. That means half of all jobs in the U.S. disappeared because of those two inventions.
Right.
Now, the Industrial Revolution came. We went to factories. We went stuff. But the second you have all autonomous vehicles, all trucks, all buses, all boats at sea, number one job on tax returns is truck driver. That job's gone. When you now don't buy a phone and a video camera and an alarm clock and all these physical things that they're apps on your phone, that means there's not factories making them, there's not people trucking them, there's not clerks stocking them, and there's not retailers selling them. All those jobs disappear. So you're seeing a huge change. And when you raise minimum wage, and this isn't a political statement, what then happens is it forces other businesses to become more efficient and automate. All your fast, quick service restaurants now have apps so you can order before you get there. That reduces jobs in the place. That voice at the drive-through window will be a bot, you know, just like Alexa and Cortana and everything else. That bots now hear and listen and comprehend better than 95% of humans.
You know, one of the things, Jay, that I think is so powerful about what you're saying for launch treaters out there is that there is a ripple effect of disruption. So you may look at something and say, oh, you know, driverless cars. Well, I'm not a truck driver, so that doesn't impact me. But what I'm hearing you say is, well, driverless cars means there isn't a truck driver. That means there aren't rest stops. That means, you know, I could go out and out from
there.
Oh,
wait, let's go the ripple a couple more degrees.
Let's do it.
When driverless cars get in a car accident, it's the manufacturer's fault, not yours, which means there's no more auto insurance. So if your guy's selling insurance, that's going away. Okay. I was recently called by the number one he advertised on television, so I won't use his name, a drunk driving attorney in the country. And he's like, what's going to happen to my business? And I go, you already called me. You know what's going to happen to your business, okay? You know, cars don't drink and drive. Drivers do, and there won't be drivers. So you start seeing, but here's the thing. You can see what these changes are before they're fully manifested. You can get ahead of them. You can benefit from this change. I'll give you a real simple example that woke me up to this, because I was stupid. I was clueless. I'm not smarter than the average bear. I've just lived longer. And that little bit of gray hair, I'm trying to pay it forward so other people can learn quicker than I did. In the beginning of the PC revolution, so I started on PCs day one with the first machines and was lucky that the world came to where I was. But all the best and brightest were coding and doing this and that. And I had a friend named Billy and said, wait a second, people want to buy a $2,000 computer for their home. That's the biggest, most expensive thing they have in their home. They needed a dust cover. And back in the 80s, literally people bought a piece of plastic to put over their computer, okay? And then when the mouse came out, he made plastic mouse pads. And when we had floppy disks, he made a little plastic thing to put floppy. So he never learned how to use a computer. He saw all these accessories, and he sold his company when he was in his 20s for $132 million to Rubbermaid that said, well, we make plastic. We got to get in the computer business. And you go, okay, that was an example from way back then. When the iPhone came out 10 years ago, that was a very expensive purchase for most people. So somebody made a little $15 case that cost them a nickel to make. And we all lined up to buy that $15 case.
Yeah, I've talked to the founders of OtterBox. And, you know, it really was, they took that ripple effect of these mobile devices and rode that wave to a whole new industry and a whole new business and billion-dollar business.
So now we're seeing a trillion-dollar industry starting with augmented reality and virtual reality. I'm obsessed. I'm now vice chairman of Deloitte and totally focused on transforming enterprise and saving billions of dollars for our clients using augmented reality. But that's a big change. Internet of Things, 3D printing, all these things fundamentally will change how we work, how we live, how we play, and there's tons of opportunities that haven't been tapped.
What do you think are some of the other opportunities out there? So there's augmented reality. What are some of the other, let me rephrase that, what are some of the other things that are happening that are shifting everything and making those opportunities?
So we're going to start having billions and billions of touch points onto the Internet of Things. So inanimate objects will start communicating. And augmented reality will now be glasses that are the same price. Last year, Americans bought over 85 million pairs of glasses for over $100. What if that pair of glasses could translate any sign in a foreign country into your language? Mm. What if it could give you subtitles so you can speak to anybody in any foreign language? And I can go on and on. What if you just walk into supermarket aisle where there's, you know, 40,000 SKUs, but your doctor just told you you have diabetes? Are you going to read every product, or you just tell your glasses, make everything else fade out? I just want to see what I'm allowed to eat. or I want just to see the vegan foods or the non-gluten foods or whatever. So we will now be using augmented the way that we've been using a smartphone. And a smartphone, it's only been around 10 years. It now in the US, we stare at our screen for 3 hours a day. How many billions of dollars is that attention worth? So now what's going to happen? Then you have 3D printing. Things can be made just in time at different locales. And it's not just plastic toys. You're 3D printing kidneys. You're 3D printing skin. You're 3D printing foods. There's now vegan meat that bleeds. It has hemoglobin. It tastes just like real steak, but no animals are killed and no acres of trees have to go away. So there are such amazing technologies. And here's the secret, again, that took me forever to learn because I'm a moron. Big companies, big scientists invent stuff for no reason at all. Let me repeat that. Scientists have no idea what they're inventing. That's, by the way, the definition of a scientist. They're out researching stuff. They're not saying, here's how I can make money with it. So there are websites that have tons of patents that the government will give you and let you mechanize, okay? You know, when we went back in my youth, when NASA went up and we went to the moon, they realized there's no gravity. They're going to have to figure out how to get dust into a bag with something battery powered to suck it up. And they hired a company called Black & Decker, you know, to make it. They said, you know what? We'll call it a dustbuster and see if people want it in their homes. So there's tons of different uses of technology that you can make life better by looking at what problems we still have.
You know, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I think it applies because what I'm hearing you say is, you know, sometimes it's about looking at what's right in front of us and just thinking of a different application. And when my kids were young, I had the Burley, you know, that attaches to your bike because that's how you take your kids around biking. And I used to use it for grocery shopping instead. And now my son takes a saxophone to school. But I got stopped on the street one day by a guy who didn't understand why I had groceries in there and not a kid in there. And I thought, well, just because you tell me this is how it's supposed to be used doesn't mean that's the only use for that thing.
Absolutely. And you could have taken it one step further, said, you know, there's probably more people doing groceries than kids. Maybe there's a Burley add-on. Maybe there's a competitor to it. Maybe you can, you know, add a product into that cycle. And now we have the sharing economy, you know, the Uberization of things where, you know, women used to have this tough dilemma, and it's not sexist, it's just guys don't think this way, of do I spend a fortune on a great dress and then I have to wear it at 10 parties and be known as the girl with the pink dress, or do I buy a few different dresses that never look great at anything? And two women, grad students, came up with Rent the Runway, and they said, wait a second,
genius.
Why not just rent it? They became billionaires, it's a multi-billion dollar, but it fundamentally changed the couture industry because nobody's buying dresses when you can wear a different great outfit every time you go out at less than the cost of buying a great outfit ever.
You know, it's interesting. One of my favorite questions to ask in anything is, well, why does it have to be this way? And I think it frustrates people sometimes, like, because that's what it is. But those are really at the bottom line, a lot of these stories you're sharing is someone somewhere, some average person said, well, why does it have to be this way?
And let me just leave everybody with the nugget again. One that took me so long to see, because I started on the internet in 78. I mean, I was way ahead and I didn't understand why the world wouldn't listen, okay? I knew I was right. I was young. I was arrogant. Oh, yes, it has to happen. And everything that we predicted did happen, but not as fast as we did. And the reason was this, and this is what people have to remember. It's not the job of people in living in the past to understand the future. It's your job to communicate your vision in a way that people living in the past can comprehend. Mm. And if you can start seeing the world in a way that you can explain it to them, then you'll see progress, then you'll see success. If you go about fighting, you're wrong, I'm right, you're never gonna close a sale or change the world. And so people laughed at every one of these things. I created the first social media community. And people were like, why? And when a million people joined, all of a sudden you're smart.
Right, yeah, right. Then you're an innovator.
I put the first auction on the internet. I'm like, why would people do that? Yeah. You know, when it grew to become, you know, billions and billions of dollars, people get it.
Yeah. Well, success always speaks for itself, but you've got to be the one, right, to be willing to get out there and try it for the first time.
And not be afraid of failing.
Yeah. And to your point, failing and failure are two different things. So I want to really quickly, before we kind of close out with the end questions, loop back to, you had mentioned your workbook about how to disrupt you. So will you just talk a little bit about what that is and where the listeners can go get a free copy? Because I think that would be a fantastic way to start the journey.
Sure. So I wrote the book Disrupt You to really walk people through the whole process. The first third of the book is how to change yourself, then breaks every piece of the industry and business. And for those that are not money-centric, the last third is how to apply the same things to change the world and the big issues, education, water, healthcare, whatever. But to get you started right now, there's a 40-page workbook. It's free. It goes along with the reading the book or listening to the book. If you haven't ever used an Audible book, get Disrupt You for free from Audible. And just go to my website. It's my name, JaySamit.com. Click on the thing and my staff will send it out to you and you can start your journey to success today.
Okay, Launch Readers, go get it. So I was going to ask, where can people go to connect with you? Is that your website that you just said, or are there other places?
Go to my website. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'm out there. You know, part of the journey is being motivated. So I try to tweet out and Instagram out daily motivation with a little sense of humor. Because it's going to be lonely. It's going to be tough. But it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So, Jay, last question. What's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? Can be a hobby, passion, experience.
I'm a performing member of the Magic Castle. I'm a magician in Hollywood.
That's a good one. So here's my question for you on that. As the, you know, person who loves to watch magic, do you have a special area? Like, is it cards or mind games or?
Mostly close up. But I'm in awe of people that are moving that art form forward, because I think it's a great confidence builder. It's the only art form where people want to see the artist fail. So if you can overcome that, you can overcome anything.
Well, Jay, this was fantastic. Thank you for all this insight around disruption. For Launch Street listeners out there, this is your opportunity to right now go and make sure that you are disrupting yourself and ahead of the curve and not the ones being left behind.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.